Carrying on, we are going down to number 14, 2408, in regards to Dwight Vanesh, DVM. Tracy, if you can read the summary for us.
Sure. Case 2408, the complainant is the Arizona State Veterinary Medical Examining Board, and the respondent is Dwight Vanesh, DVM. At the July 19, 2023 Arizona Veterinary Medical Examining Board meeting, the board opened investigation after reviewing premises inspections conducted at Chandler Small Animal Clinic. And this case was brought directly to you for your review and discussion and consideration.
Okay, great. Well, we've got Dr. Vanesh present, as well as Ms. Mosher.
Yes, Karen Mosher.
Okay, great. Looking forward. Thanks for being here today. I can give you both up to five. You'll just state your names for the record again, and then I can give you up to 5 minutes to speak.
Dr. Dwight Vanesh.
Okay.
Karen Mosher.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, so to respect the board for time and everything, I wrote my notes last night, so I covered the things I wanted to say and we'll go from there.
Sounds good.
Okay, so I appreciate the opportunity to address the board. I do take it seriously that the points noted by the inspection do that. And this is why I'm here. Okay, this is why I've taken specific actions laid out in my response earlier. Immediately after having the inspection, I reviewed practices and procedures with my office manager. Well, we could do a handle of these. In order to thoroughly handle once and for all, I reviewed not only practices and procedures of others, but my own for quality checking. To avoid further similar violations, I have worked out actions to be taken on her level, and my tech at the text level and myself. With these in place, I can and do monitor more accurately, being complete and quality. I am confident in our solutions that they are being carried out. I have Karen here as she does daily and weekly actions to prepare areas for my final inspection. I have my lead tech going through each and every chart of her techs weekly to ensure they are complete. We are using this to educate and mentor any person who has an inadequate or incomplete chart. I have Karen doing audits of the controlled substances used on a weekly and semi-weekly basis. This last audit demonstrated that there were no omissions or errors in logging the controlled substances. There are some other things, these are some of the things which we've done. I have and continue to provide excellent veterinary services to my patients. I've been doing this for nearly 50 years. There are at least two excellent veterinary doctor students currently studying at university that were mentored by me. I currently employ two more who wish to become veterinarians. I'm approaching to the end of my career and will be turning my clinic over to a very fine group very soon. This will eliminate for me all the distractions and problems a business owner has. It will make it even easier for me to ensure compliance with all the requirements. I will, for the next year or so, continue to be the responsible veterinarian for the new owner. I hope the board will take into consideration my extensive contributions to the veterinary field of medicine, and after the clinic sale, there will be no doubt be rather an immediate inspection than for the new owner, which I can assure you that the situation will show remedy. Okay. And that's basically my points, and I can get these corrected and I'm getting the solution.
Okay.
Can I get you a piece of data?
Yeah, go ahead.
In 2018, when the original inspection occurred, that is referenced in the notes originally here. There were many gross violations, like I had just started there. There were controlled substances in the hospital, unlocked. You know, it was just like, you know, so, and there were other things of that nature. And there's, you know, neither one of us are saying that these things were not wrong that occurred. They were wrong. But I just want to point out that equating 2018 to the present there's an inaccuracy there. So the things which are wrong, were wrong, are not wrong. The drug logs are audited every week. using Hugot from Avamark. And then literally every single entry, I go to the book. The last one I did, there were zero omissions. Nothing was wrong. So like every weekish, I'll do that. The freezer that was brought up, that was an issue. So rather than clean it, it had sort of a cracked seal kind of thing. We just went and bought a new one and got that, you know, within a week. So, you know, I had custom x-ray to make it so that the, you know, Chandler Pet Cleaner or Dr. Benish is on every x-ray. And so I guess the point I'm making is there are some, they are, for the most part, not totally, but for the most part, administrative wrongnesses. They have been corrected. We did sit down together and figure out, what do I need to do to make sure that the people he employs do their job properly so that he can review, and it is a matter of just reviewing. We do see, doctor is the only doctor. He sees about 90 to 100 patients every single week. He works 6 days a week, has since Skip was a pup. And he does a couple surgeries every day. So organization, it's not caring, it's organization so that it can be performed. And as he said, he's wrapping things up, so we just need about another year for him to be able to wrap things up. So anyway, I know there'll be an inspection coming up, and I will fear not.
It'll probably be sooner than a year yet.
The inspection wouldn't be triggered by the sale of the practice. It would be changed by the premise, right?
A change of ownership cancels the license, and someone else would need to submit a new application.
So, but if Dr. Benish is staying on as the responsible vet for the practice,
we would still continue to hold him responsible.
So would there be a reason for an inspection if the responsible vet doesn't change? It would still trigger the sale would?
Yes.
And I do believe that it should close probably the 29th of this month, possibly, you know, maybe the first week of October, but it looks good for the 29th. So it's right around the corner.
Well, Mr. Loheed is the lead on this one, and I know Ms. Sullivan looks like she has a question as well, but.
I'll wait till Mr. Loheed proceeds and then ask my question.
Yeah, but what if I go a different direction?
You know me, I'll speak up.
All right, so I appreciate the information today, but I also think, realistically, it's inaccurate because the two 2018 the potential violations found in those two inspections, there are repeat potential violations in 2023. They are a repeat of those other two. And following the Bay inspection, there's always the opportunity to, because they're not written down as violations, they're written down as potential violations to be corrected, and we get a report back about what's corrected. Then in August, we got another, okay, these are potentials, okay, here's how we corrected it. Now we're at this point where 5 years later, it's some of the very same violations, and we've got another letter. Here's how we corrected it, and you've also come in to tell us here's how we corrected it. Well, that's still a problem because apparently the initial corrections didn't stick. So, and one thing that I couldn't find a way to tie it into my discussion or motions, but one of the photographs in the memo that was showing the drug logs had a column for waste and hub loss. And in my mind, that should never ever be a column. That is a row. when a bottle is finished. And that's a, in there, but it shouldn't be something that, I mean, it should be accounted, it needs to be accounted for. But it shouldn't be a column where you expect that, well, that's gonna happen. That, sure it is, but it shouldn't be expected. The expectations should be to be perfect. We all know we're not, and so we make that little notation when you finish a bottle, that you're a little bit short, you're a little bit long. And it just means that, you know, a tenth of a milliliter got extra or shorted on that list of things. And it's not that big a deal, except it is a controlled substance that needs to be accounted for. So.
May I just say that I.
Well, we're done with your presentation of it right now, and we're just in our discussion. So, in light of what you presented today, we may vote some of this down, but I'm gonna put it out there anyway because it's what I would do for anybody else. If they hadn't come in and said, yeah, I'm gonna close on the sale of the clinic and I'll be out of here. But then you also said, you're still gonna be responsible for the veterinarian. So I'm gonna stick with what I've got and start off with that. So Madam Chair, we opened this case for repeated, uncorrected, potential violations documented in three different inspections. July 10, 2023, August 6, 2018, and May 22, 2018. So Madam Chair, I move to adopt the findings of fact documented in the investigative division report and the staff memo dated July 11, 2023 as our findings of fact.
Okay.
Second.
Motion and a second to adopt the findings of fact. There's no further discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay, motion passes.
Madam Chair, I move to find the following violations based on the findings of fact as our conclusions of law. Error is 3222.33A1, unprofessional or dishonorable conduct, making false reports in writing on two or three occasions to the board and staff, stating that potential violations documented in premise inspections had been remedied. ARS 3222.74A3, a violation of section 3222.33 or any rule adopted pursuant to that section. ARS 3222.74A5, failure to maintain veterinary supplies, controlled substances, and surgical and other equipment in a safe, efficient, and sanitary manner. And that is as related to R311-502D, R311-502J2, and R311-7034. ARS 3222.74A4, failure to maintain accurate records or reports as required by this chapter or by federal or state laws and rules pertaining to the storing, labeling, selling, dispensing, prescribing, and administering of controlled substances. And that is as related to R311-502K3 and R311-502L7. ARS 3222.81A, a veterinarian may dispense drugs and devices kept by the veterinarian if, one, all prescription-only products are dispensed in packages labeled with the following information: the dispensing veterinarian's name, address, and telephone number, the date the drug is dispensed, the animal owner's name, and the animal or herd's identification, and D, the name, strength, quantity of the drug, directions for its use, and any cautionary statements. Two, the dispensing veterinarian enters in the medical record the name, strength, quantity of the drug dispensed, the date the drug is dispensed, and the therapeutic reason. And those are as related to R311-502L7 and R311-802. ARS 3222.74A6, failure to keep written records of all animals receiving veterinary services, failure to provide a summary of such records upon request to the client, or failure to produce such records at the request of the board. And that is related to R311-502H2, R311-502H5, R311-502L4 and 5, and R311-502M4. And that is all.
Okay, question for you. Just because I was trying to write it down at the beginning, but there was too much to keep up with. Are all of those findings things that were on the most recent inspection in addition to one of the previous inspections?
Yes.
Like were all, every single one of them duplicated?
They all match up, yes. They were all duplicates.
Okay.
Of the three.
And because I'm hearing different things in testimony today, is there any reason to consider moving this to an informal? I know this came straight to the board, but where we can ask more questions about what there's, why they're thinking some of these have been resolved and some of them haven't. Like it sounds like we're saying none of them have been resolved because we found it on multiple inspections, but they're saying that these issues have been resolved, at least the way I heard it. So would there be any benefit in getting more of an explanation as to what has happened before we make this motion?
I don't believe so. I mean, we've got three in a row and we've kind of set a precedent, and in particular, what makes it pop and make the red flags and sirens go off is when controlled substances are involved. But also, when the exact same thing is over and over, I mean, it's not something new, it is across the board in all three inspections, all of these that I listed off here, that our conclusions of law are all repeats. So there's none of the any of the other, there's not that many that aren't repeat. There's more that are repeat than are not repeat.
And I think certainly you can look at like unresolved issues as being aggravating factors, but I think what the focus needs to be on is the results of the current inspection.
Yeah, that's why I wanted to make sure all of these were on the current inspection, because
yes.
I don't want it to be that.
No, they're all current.
One of these was from 18,
no.
Like, right? Like,
No. Okay. They're all current now.
Yeah.
And they all also match up that they're all repeat.
Yes.
Three times.
Yes. Madam Chair?
Yes.
I would like to ask a quick question of Ms. Mosher. Mm-hmm. Are you a certified veterinary technician or a DVM?
No.
Okay. What the response, the respondent, which is Dr. Benesch, technically is responsible. It would be best, since you're going to continue being a responsible veterinarian, that you incorporate the comments of your practice manager in your response, because we don't regulate office managers. We regulate DVMs and CVTs. There are a number of points in the staff report where it claims the respondent did not address the potential violation. You would, may have addressed it in yours, but it wasn't incorporated into his response. And it's a technicality, but it's an important one. Often we run into problems where we're dealing with unregulated third parties, whether it's an office manager, a corporation, or whatever. So just, for future reference, okay.
But I guess that goes back to, so Jane, help me here, because I don't know. If some of those items that you're saying were incorporated in her report and not his report,
yeah,
are those some of the things that we're still finding violations with?
Yes. But it goes back to the initial violation that was cited. I don't know if it's all of them, or not. But I can tell you which ones specifically they are.
Because I feel like how we've done premises in the past, and I think we're changing a little bit on premises, because I think we've had more premise issues recently than what I can recall in the past. But
how I recall premises happening is we get the inspection report and we hear what has changed, what are they doing about it, how are they fixing it, and decide whether we feel like that's adequate or not. And what I'm hearing here is that the bigger issue is the fact that we've heard that multiple times and nothing has changed, or hasn't changed and been sustainable. And maybe it's not nothing, maybe it's some things have changed, but we haven't gotten to where we need to be as a clinic, right? As an entirety of the clinic. So this is a little bit different in that the repeat pieces, so I understand what you're saying and that we're looking at this most recent inspection, but I think the bigger issue is the fact that we're gonna have to interpret this differently based on the fact that it's been three different premise inspections than what we would normally do with one that came before us today, where it sounds like they're doing everything they can to fix it at this point, but this is a third time, right? Like, that's where it's different for me than if this was the first time.
So the board's options, I mean, the board's options are to vote this forward to an informal interview or to vote this forward to a formal hearing in the event that you're thinking revocation or suspension.
More than a year.
30 days, more than 30.
More than 30 days, sorry. It's a little different, apologize for that. Would be appropriate, then you're looking at a formal hearing. Again, I think the focus needs to be on the July 2023 inspection.
Right, it's the culmination of it until that point.
Right, but, and the violations found then, but that's, I mean, nothing's in a vacuum, right? Everything has a context, and the context here is this is a repeat offense. And so, I mean, the board may be looking at, I mean, the discipline goes to the licensed veterinarian as a veterinarian, but also as a responsible veterinarian for the premises. So it's sort of it's sort of a twofold thing. The board has in the correct context, has the ability to discipline the veterinarian for these offenses, and especially in view of the repeat offenses, goes to the level of discipline that may be appropriate.
Okay. I wanted to let Victoria jump in next.
So, Madam Chair, members of the board, and Beth, so there's an overarching law that says that the board cannot take action the first time a potential violation is found, and if there's exceptions, if the board thinks it was committed intentionally, if it's immediate threat to public health and safety, if it's such a huge problem it can't be corrected in a reasonable time, or if it's a pattern of non-compliance. So typically we would never even bring anything to the board the first time it happens and they told us they fixed it. This is the third time the same things have happened, so this is the opportunity, if the board chooses to take the action based on the repeat violations.
Okay, so we have...
We have a motion on the floor, and I thought we had a second.
Right.
To find these violations.
So, there's no further discussion.
And the other option,
if we don't
vote in favor of the violations, we could still make a motion to move it to an informal. Like, if we had more questions on these violations and why they're still repeat violations, we'd need to go to an informal.
Yes.
If
you
failed.
But that's not what you typically do.
My main concern is with the first cited violation. Again, because of the dual communication here, I don't know that it's the responsible veterinarian necessarily. In this case, I can go through the specific sites if you would like. Where it says the respondent didn't say that. He didn't include a response in his report. So there are a number of areas where it was covered in the practice managers, again, but not in Dr. Benesch's. So to therefore say that he is the one not being truthful with the board, I can't necessarily support that. And again, if you'd like it, there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 citations in the staff report where it says the respondent did not address this potential violation as part of his response to the board investigation, but it may have been covered in the practice managers. So that's where the rub is for me.
I think there's been a good amount of discussion now,
yeah.
So let's go ahead and vote.
Okay.
And then
if it fails, we can do something different. So should we make Mr. Lohi repeat all his?
No. That was a lot.
I know.
Anybody need to see it?
Yeah, I was like, you did great, so.
Thank you for, is this an extra copy?
Okay, so again, no further discussion. All those in favor?
Do you need a roll call for violation, for violation?
For each violation?
No, no, no.
For the whole group of?
A roll call's never a bad idea, especially something on the phone.
Okay, so roll call.
Ms. Prager?
Aye.
Ms. Frost?
Aye.
Dr. James is an aye. Mr. Lohi?
Aye.
Ms. Solomon?
Aye.
Dr. Wright?
Aye.
Motion passes.
Madam Chair, I'd like to ask staff if the respondent has any prior violations.
And you know what, I just want to point out, I apologize, I probably should have had you both step back. Sometimes we end up keeping people forward, but you're welcome to go, you know, sit in the audience as well. I just wanted
yeah,
to.
Yeah, I just want at the end of an opportunity to apologize for not being clear on something. It seems like, it seemed like I was being dishonest and it wasn't.
Thank you.
So previous disciplinary history, there was a complaint in 1994 where the veterinarian was placed on probation for 6 months and had to do 9 hours of continuing education, and it was with respect to the treatment of a pet. Let's see here, in 2004, Dr. Banesh was issued a letter of concern that's due to communication issues. And then in 2019, Dr. Banesh was issued a letter of concern, and this was also with respect to communication with a pet owner.
I would.
All right, so I'm not sure that any of those are gonna.
I don't think any of those relate to what we're talking about today.
No.
As far as factoring them in or not.
No.
I think in
so,
50 years of practice, that's a pretty amazing.
Yeah.
So this next, yes. So this next is where we may vote down part or all of it, amend it, whatever. But this is without news that the clinic was up for sale and that was all going to change. Madam Chair, I move to offer a consent agreement with the following terms. Respondent's veterinary license number 1666 be placed on a stayed suspension and probation for 1 year. Respondent will submit a practice manager candidate or candidates. It will be Arizona licensed veterinarian for board approval within 30 days of accepting the consent agreement, and granted, and the board grants authority to Executive Director Victoria Whitmore to approve a practice monitor on behalf of the board. Respondent will provide the approved practice monitor with a copy of the consent agreement. Respondent will hire an approved practice monitor within 30 days after approval by the board or its executive director to remedy all the violations, train the respondent and staff, conduct random inspections of medical records and protocols, and submit reports of observations and progress to the board every other month until the board stipulates monitoring is no longer required. Respondent will review Arizona Revised Statutes, Title 32, Chapter 21, the Veterinary Practice Act, and associated administrative rules, and take the Arizona State exam and pass with at least 70% correct answers within 90 days after accepting the consent agreement.
Okay.
Pay a civil penalty for violation of ARS 32-2274-A4, a $1,000 civil penalty for violation of ARS 32-2274-A5, and a $1,000 civil penalty for the other four violations, $3,000 total to be paid before the end of the probation period. If not signed within 15 days of receipt, move this case to a formal hearing.
Okay. So, Victoria, I know we've done things before where we've had people review the Practice Act and write a summary of their findings. Have we ever had them retake the exam?
Yes. Yes, we certainly have. The board's been requiring that.
I just want to make sure we're consistent because it seems like sometimes it's a written recap. And I can't recall why.
I've seen in both recently. It hadn't been done until maybe the past year. It's been being used more.
Okay. I can think of one case where it's been done this year. Mm-hmm. Maybe a bit more.
Okay.
At least two.
Okay, so as far as the penalties are concerned, does anybody have any other comments before we vote on that piece?
My only thing with the retaking of the exam is, obviously I think they need to be familiar with the rules and regulations and making sure that they do that, but hiring a practice monitor kind of gets at that to me, because it's like, that's why we're spending all this time and energy to hire a practice monitor. So to me, I would rather focus on the practice monitor and making sure that that gets into place and that things are happening the way they're supposed to, than spend time and energy kind of retaking an exam that most people don't remember the details of anyway after they take it. It's not like that's going to fix the issue, is what I'm saying. So to me, reviewing the Practice Act and being familiar with it and hiring a practice monitor and getting your practice in order is what I would focus on, and not necessarily the retaking of the exam. Okay. And then as far as the civil penalties, I don't know if that's in line. I certainly understand where you came up with the logic behind it, but on a fairly clean, like, we haven't had a lot of violations, although we have had a lot of premise issues. I don't know how that weighs in, if that's pretty consistent.
Well, and the two larger amounts are controlled substance violations.
So I would be in favor. I would just remove the exam part, me personally.
How does that sound?
I'd be willing to amend to remove the review and exam.
Review and exam?
Well, there's no practical way to say. I mean, I can tell you, go read it.
Right.
If there's not a... which I think everybody ought to do anyway. It's only 80 pages between the two of them.
I still think it's good to say you should review it and be familiar with it to ensure that between that and the hiring of a practice monitor, you know what you're supposed to be doing.
So
right?
You just want to take the test out and leave the review in?
Okay. Yeah. And part of the reason on that is I don't know that I can say I believe this is an ethical issue. I think that this is somebody got themselves into a situation where they were seeing a lot of cases and working way too hard and not paying enough attention to the premise piece of this, which is unfortunate, but I think we see that from time to time. So I feel like I'd rather focus all the energy on fixing, understanding and fixing those issues than anything else.
All right, so I'll amend my motion to remove the requirement to take the state exam and pass it.
Second.
Okay. We have a motion and a second. There's no further discussion. You want to do a roll call on this one as well? Okay. Ms. Krieger?
Aye.
Ms. Frost?
Aye.
Dr. James is an aye. Mr. Lohe?
Aye.
Ms. Solomon?
Aye.
Dr. Wright?
Aye.
Okay. That concludes that. Thank you both for being here. I know that this is not where any of us want to be, and again, for what it's worth, we do appreciate your, you know, contributions to the veterinary field, and I hope you can enjoy your retirement years here soon. So it sounds like it is deserved if you're working 6 days a week for, you know, long days. So thank you both. And obviously there was a lot there. So after this meeting, if you do have any questions, feel free to reach out to the executive director, Victoria.
Can I just let you know that I was not trying to be dishonest. I was trying to communicate that what 2018 was and what we have now is two different things with some of the same violations. That's all.
Okay. But
I wasn't trying to be dishonest.
No, thank you.
Thank you. Okay, do you guys want to take a break or do a couple more?
Yeah,
Okay, so, so we're going to go, let's see, actually. Tracy, are, for 23-117, are they here?
The attorney's here.
Okay, got it. So let's go ahead and do that one. So we are going to go to number 12, 23-117, in regards to Jason Long, DVM. Tracy, if you'll read our summary for that.
Sure. Case 23-117, the complainant is Kelly Loney, the respondent is Jason Long, DVM. On January 19, 2023, Lincoln, a 9-year-old male British Labrador, was presented to respondent due to an ear hematoma. Respondent recommended an ear clean. Complainant declined and elected to clean the ears herself at home. On January 23, 2023, the dog was presented for a recheck. Respondent gave her treatment options for the ear hematoma. Complainant consulted with her breeder prior to selecting a form of treatment to drain the seroma and give an injection of a steroid. On February 2nd, 2023, complainant presented the dog for a Larson's drain placement. Due to the dog removing the Larson drain, surgery was performed on February 10th, 2023. Complainant was advised that the bandage would need to be replaced whenever it became soiled and to use the no-flap ear wrap until recheck. On February 14th, 2023, the dog presented with a suture reaction. An Elizabethan collar was recommended and to use the no-flap ear wrap only when unattended. On February 21st, 2023, respondent noted that the dog had a malodorous ear canal. The surgery site was healed well. The ear canal was cleaned and the dog was sent home with Prostatex to treat the infection. Respondent advised to discontinue the no-flap ear wrap and continue using the Elizabethan collar. If there was no response to the Prostatex, a culture would also be that would be the next step. On February 23rd, 2023, the dog was presented to Parkway Animal Clinic for a second opinion. Dr. Bauer evaluated the dog, a culture was collected, and the dog was started on Vatrol pending the results. Prostatex was continued to treat the ear infection. The culture results showed MRSP. Treatment was recommended and approved by a complainant. And the committee concluded that no violation of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred. And it was moved and seconded that the board dismiss this issue with no violation. The motion was approved with a vote of 4-0.
Okay, thank you. We do not have the complainant here, nor the respondent, but we do have the respondent's attorney. If you would like to come forward, or I didn't know if you were speaking or monitoring or all of the above.
Sure.
Thank you for being here. If you'll just state your name for the record, and then I can give you up to 5 minutes to address the board.
Sure, my name is Fatima Badruddin, and I represent Dr. Long, DVM.
Okay, thank you.
And Dr. Long couldn't be here today. He had a pre-planned trip out of the country. So we're here to actually ask
make sure.
Sorry.
Make sure you're not touching.
Hey, Dr. Wright, make sure you're muted.
Yes, I'm here. Sorry, my fault.
Okay.
So we are asking that the board adopt the investigative committee's findings and find that there was no violation. Dr. Long treated the patient for about 1 month for a left-sided aural hematoma. The complainant made it clear from the beginning she didn't want to spend a lot of money, and Dr. Long tried to keep that in mind as he was providing treatment. After the first visit, Dr. Long saw the hematoma but felt the ear canal looked good, so he recommended the ear cleaning. The complainant rejected doing that in office because she did that at home, so he recommended that she clean the ear twice that week and then once a week after that. The patient returned again, and Dr. Long discussed the three treatment options in detail and went over the pros and cons of each. The complainant said she had to check with her breeder and then chose the drain with the steroid injection, which was actually what Dr. Long had advised against due to the low success rate. The patient was then given a Larson's drain. Less than a week after that, the complainant called because the patient had removed the drain, so then surgery was scheduled. Prior to surgery, Dr. Long discussed the patient's elevated ALKP, but the complainant declined additional workup and said a different clinic had looked into it and it was unremarkable. After the surgery, the complainant was advised to use the no ear wrap, flap ear wrap on the patient to prevent the patient from actually scratching and getting at the surgery site since the patient had already knocked out the drain. The complainant was advised to use the no flap ear wrap until the recheck. Then during the very last visit, which was on February 21st, the patient was seen for a recheck, and the ear canal showed the very first signs of a problem. But the surgery site itself was healing well. The ear canal was clean, and the claimant was given Positex, which Dr. Long had started with because he had success with in the past. And the next step would be a culture. And the reason for that was it was also a very expensive step, and he was keeping in mind what the patient had wanted, or what the complainant had wanted. So Dr. Long did examine the patient at every check. The ear canal looked good until that very last appointment. His next step would have been to move on with the treatment. He didn't get to see the patient again after that because the complainant took the patient to another hospital. And Dr. Long wasn't given the opportunity to review any medical records, so he can't have any comment on that. But we do respectfully request that the board adopt the investigative committee's findings and find that there was no violation and dismiss the complaint.
Okay. Thank you. You may step back.
Thank you.
And Dr. Wright, you are the lead on this case.
Yes, thank you. So, yeah, after going through and reading everything, ear hematomas are just such a pain. There's multiple different ways of treating these, and the reason is there's just no perfect way that's going to work. Personally, I prefer the draining and steroid method, and it works for me really well. I rarely have a failure. I've taught that to many doctors, and it just doesn't work for them. So it's just kind of a hit or miss thing, and it's just being, unfortunately, a difficult disease to treat. I don't see any actual statute violations here. It's just more of an unfortunate situation. But I'd make a motion to dismiss with no violations.
Second.
Okay. We have a motion and a second to dismiss case 23-117. If there's no further discussion.
So, Madam Chair, I'd just point out that.
Yes.
And I think the attorney tried to allude to that, but didn't quite get to the point. He took it step by step as he went through this. And the next step is likely exactly what the second veterinarian was doing, because he was presented the animals in that condition at that time, and that would have been probably exactly the same thing he was going to do. He just didn't have the opportunity to do it.
Right.
So there really wasn't a change. It was going as the owner kind of dictated, this is what I'll comply with and what I want.
Right. Okay. All right. Well, all those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed? Okay, motion passes. Case 23-117 is dismissed. Let's go back up to the top. Number one, 23-106 in regards to Stephen DeCamp, DBM. You'll read the front load, Tracy.
Sure. Case 23-106, the complainant is Jackie Gregory. The respondent is Stephen DeCamp, DBM. On January 13, 2023, Frank, a 3-year-old male French bulldog mix, was presented to respondent for an anal gland infection. Respondent was unable to flush the anal gland and infuse with an antibiotic ointment due to the dog's behavior. The dog was discharged and was to return in 2 weeks for a recheck. On January 27, 2023, the dog was presented to respondent for a recheck. The dog was taken into the treatment area for evaluation. The dog became fractious and thrashed his head aggressively. The dog's behavior continued, therefore a thorough rectal exam was aborted. The area did appear to be healing properly. The dog was returned to complainant, where the dog continued to pant excessively. The following day, the dog was presented to respondent due to possible neck injury, as well as scleral hemorrhage to the left eye. Upon exam, it was determined that the dog's neck was painful and was admitted to the premises for medical observation. During this time, the dog ate well and was discharged later with medical management for neck and left eye pain. On February 10, 2023, the dog was presented to respondent for sedated cervical radiographs. The radiographs were submitted to a radiologist for interpretation and revealed the dog had IVDD of the neck. It was recommended to have the lesions further evaluated with an advanced imaging and consultation with a neurologist. Complainant expressed concerns with respondent's treatment of the dog on January 27th that resulted in the dog's injuries. And the committee concluded that no violation of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded that the board dismiss this issue with no violation. The motion was approved with a vote of 5-0.
Okay.
Thank you. We do not have the complaint present. It looks like they've provided a statement that was, that's in your folder. Or I'm sorry, it's in...
In the packet, it's online.
Yes, okay. And then the respondent is not here, but we do have Mr. Stoll.
Monitoring on.
Okay, got it. And Dr. James, you are the lead on this?
Yeah, so this case for me was kind of a tough one because I first listened to the investigative committee and review of the videos that were provided and that the handling and everything for this dog was correct and within reason. And then I reviewed the video and I was not so sure I necessarily agreed. And so I would really love to hear from the technicians and other doctors that do this every day as to their interpretation of the handling of this dog. Because to me, three people plus laying on a dog on a table to restrain it on top of a dog, like literally laying on this dog while this dog is a brachycephalic breed and breathing heavily and really struggling. I don't personally find that that's appropriate restraint. And so I'm really struggling with that piece of it because I don't feel like the care was wrong. I feel like what they were trying to do was the right thing. But in my medical opinion, this dog should have been sedated long before we got to this, and I'm actually really surprised that this dog didn't have more complications than what it had. Because if this happened in any grooming salon or anything that I've ever worked with, the restraint of this animal, I would have expected non-cardiogenic pulmonary edema, hands down. I'm really struggling with the restraint and whether that was adequate or appropriate.
Nikki wants to.
As a technician, I think that obviously we have an oath too, and I'm the first most vocal one to say this pet needs chemical restraint. Now, 26 years ago, yeah, we were doing those things. So I can see maybe where some people will be like, yeah, it's all right. But this profession in the last 10 years has grown by leaps and bounds on handling of patients and what it means, right? The next time they come to visit, or anytime they come to visit. So to me, I was like, ooh, not ideal. I get that the diagnosis of IVDD, like, yay, the pet had that, but did we exacerbate it, right? Because that's what the concern is. I mean, if we have a pet that comes in on emergency and somebody says they have IVDD, we're super duper overly cautious and careful. Should you be any different not knowing that they have IVDD? So to me, I'm where you are. I'm like, oh, that's not our shiningest moment there in this profession, and we could have done better. Now, if you had a conversation with the owner, look, we really do need to do some chemical restraint, and they absolutely decline it, and you have to tell them, look, we're going to have to handle your pet more than we should. Maybe there was a discussion there.
Is there a concern with the breed about about sedating it?
With any breed, you have to choose wisely with your sedations, and brachycephalics, there is a discussion with that. But at the same time, there are options. A lot of them now, especially fear-free, is a really big thing. They're oral. And so you can give something prior to them coming in, something super simple. That a lot of veterinarians are fond of. I can't say personally what this veterinarian would have done, but I'm saying our job is to advocate for the patient, advocate for them that this is not going to go well if we have to use three team members to restrain. Is the only thing I'm saying. If there is a conversation, then you're in a different place. But
and I think that the they
never really controlled
actually,
that animal.
No,
right?
No.
And they never did.
I mean, they weren't able to do what they needed to do, and he did say next time we'll have to sedate. My concern is this video went on for 6 minutes of three people laying on a dog, an e-collar being shoved on the dog visibly showing signs of uncomfort and stress. And I just don't see.
And it's brachycephalic.
But then I go, I would say that is the fault of the veterinarian, right? They should have stopped that rather than the fault of the technician.
I think. I mean, you're working under the direction of the veterinarian.
Yeah.
So do you speak up and say, because
Those techs were brave. The one like had him on her shoulder, and it was, you know, as she's trying to corral him. I mean, it was kind of horrifying.
Yeah,
yeah, the laying on top of the animal was what I took.
Yeah, I don't think I would hate brave, but yeah.
They were just inches away from injury themselves.
Right, exactly. It's tough to watch whenever you understand all of the potential outcomes of injury, yes, not to the only to the pet, but to the people involved, because we, and Dr. Wright has said this many times over the years that I know, we have to be very cognizant of the injury to people, because that's no small deal either, and that's a piece of the fact. The puzzle, but this is a tough one.
Our options, and what I had written down was we could either move it to informal to get these questions, or I don't even know if I have any questions. I think we could do that, or to me, it would fall under professionally acceptable procedures for how you're handling this animal, and you know, offer a consent agreement. I
don't have any, I mean, seeing the video, I personally don't have any more questions. The video, I thought, very well spoke for itself. As you said, it was 6 minutes of wrestling with that dog. And you could see the increase in the distress level, even as a layperson watching it happen. My distress just watching it. So I would go with the latter suggestion.
And I don't know why missed it because I saw it happening in the video, but they actually vaccinated that dog right before it left.
Mm-hmm.
That didn't do any good.
They had to do it.
If your adrenaline's up that high, that vaccine doesn't do squat. It won't work. So you just wasted it.
Wow. And sometimes we have to vaccinate that way. I mean, not have to, but
no, you could sedate them and vaccinate them.
Yeah, but other people say, do you really want to do that too, right? Because now you're giving something they could have a reaction to under sedation. I don't know. I don't necessarily know that.
Yeah, but it could be mild though, right? I mean, couldn't you just give them something just to make them a little woozy where they're not out?
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. Right. That's like the whole fear-free approach, right? It's like just a little bit of gabapentin, you know, sometimes is enough for some pets, you know. And there is some trial and error as far as like giving an oral and it being too light, right? And then the doctor has to go in and say, okay, now we have to do something different. It just depends on your education with the pet owner. They can decline it, but there is, I think, value in the education and the conversation. And that's usually what most of this is lack of communication.
Well, so if the Attorney General doesn't mind, Mr. Stoll, I think, does want to share something, and he's here on behalf.
I just want to remind you that another option would be to issue a letter of concern.
I guess if I'm weighing what I had written down was the informal versus a violation. The reason for the informal would be, did any of these conversations happen with the owner that we just don't see in here right now as to, look, we're having a hard time restraining it. Like, I went back and I tried to look at it, and the only thing I could find was after the fact that next time we may have to sedate. So I don't think it did. I think that they were trying to do their best to get this done without having to sedate the dog, and it, to me, got a little bit out of what I would consider norm, and now we have injuries that are related to it. And,
right. And the way this ended up, it's not we might have to, we will have to sedate this dog every time it comes into a vet clinic.
Well, wasn't this the one where there was a difference? In one hand, the owner was like, oh yeah, she does this, and then she was also like, I've never seen her behave like this.
Maybe I think the owner did say that that dog does behave that way. Like, I think that was documented. So, you know, and obviously I'm a little bit at a loss in that I think we're all in agreement about the restraint, but the investigative committees was definitely a different opinion as to the handling of it. So I don't want to discount what that was either. And if we feel like a letter of concern for the handling of this pet is a better way to go on, I'm also open to that. I don't know, Dr. Wright, you haven't weighed in, and we probably haven't given you an opportunity to chime in, but did you have a chance to watch that video?
Yeah, no, I agree with the discussion here, so I don't really have anything additional to add at this point. I mean, sedation is kind of a situational thing, and I mean, sometimes when you get into the moment of it, I mean, yeah, 6 minutes is a long time, but you get into the moment of restraint, and you kind of fall into that inertia of the procedure, and kind of sedation at that point kind of sometimes goes out of the mind. So, I mean, it's a difficult one there, and it's just kind of hard to do, but yeah, you don't want to stress these animals out. So I agree with the discussion that's going on.
I know, I feel like maybe once they got in there, it was, they're just trying to finish the, you know, exam, and then, you know, it's, I don't want to say it's too late, though, to give them an oral, you know, something to help sedate, and maybe they were just, you know, trying to...
And there was no actual abuse. Let me be clear. Yeah, like, there was no hitting of this dog, or... Yeah. And there was none of that, which has happened before. So I just want to be clear. Like, it was, to me, it was a clear over-restraint, and probably just what Dr. Wright said, which is in the moment, and you were trying to get it done, and you were trying to do it. So if we think a letter of concern over it is... I would feel comfortable with that. I want that documented, that I don't think that that's appropriate restraint. All right, so instead of keep going around and around, I'll make a motion that we do this as a letter of concern regarding the level and amount of restraint on this dog, especially knowing that it's a breathing challenge dog that is going to have complications from restraint, and that the practice really needs to relook at their policies around how are they going to determine when a dog needs to be chemically restrained versus physical.
Well, we need a second first, so I'm not seconding it.
So I would second that. If you would add into your letter of concern all the things, aside from the injury, the vaccination procedure is pretty much null and void, and you've probably created a mental image in that dog where it's going to be hard to get it in a vet clinic. Any veterinarian in any clinic is going to have trouble with that dog the rest of its life.
No.
From that experience, potentially. I might see that added in. I'll second.
Okay.
Dismiss
I agree
with
adding in the long-term ramifications of handling a dog like that from behavior moving forward. And okay, so we have a motion to dismiss case.
I'm sorry.
Did you have something to add there?
I'm sorry, you guys. That was, no, go ahead.
So dismissing case 23-106, issuing a letter of concern where there's no further discussion.
I have a question.
Sure.
Well, I wanted to say, since it resulted in injury to the dog, or appeared to have, or exacerbated an existing IVDD, to me that goes beyond the letter of concern because there was injury to the patient or exacerbation of a current condition. So I just wanted to state that.
Yeah. Undiagnosed.
Yeah,
it was undiagnosed at the time,
yeah.
Right?
Like, if they had known that at the time, I would have expected them to do things even more differently than they did. So, but they didn't have that information at the time. And I would also say that dogs with IVDD can aggravate that by turning their head funny, by being on a leash, by, you know, so yeah, so this restraint would definitely have caused an aggravation in my mind, but I think that that can happen pretty easily. Okay. All right, let's go ahead and vote. So all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
Nay.
Okay, so we have two nays. Okay.
Four ayes, two nays.
Do we need to know who the nays
are?
Yeah,
who are the nays?
These two.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, motion passes, case is dismissed. Let's go ahead and take a break now for 5-ish minutes, and then you got 5 minutes, Dr. Wright.